Hi, I'm the person whose closet is put in color order, but I'll also pick up an earthworm without thinking twice. In fact, I did yesterday. It needed my help. I'm not afraid to be a little messy. Human nature is messy, but nature can help us embrace it. I love the brand Seventh Generation. Their laundry detergent lifts away tough stains with the power of bioenzymes. That's exciting. You wipe your hands on your pants after you pick up an earthworm. Seventh Generation is like, don't worry. Hug a dirty tree. Huff some bark. It's good for you. That is the power of Seventh Generation. Find laundry detergent and other laundry products at seventhgeneration.com. I love worms. This episode is brought to you by Merrick Pet Care. And if you've heard me talk about Grammy, you know that she means the world to me. I wanted a dog for probably 10 years, and I was living in an apartment, couldn't have dogs. When I finally moved somewhere else, I adopted her within weeks, and it was love at first scritch. She's about 2 feet away from me as I record this. She hangs out in the studio, and all I want to do is smooch her and look at her and stare at her. I also like feeding her because I see how happy it makes her. And there's nothing like watching her lick her chops after having yummy stuff like Grammy's Paw Pie or Real Texas Beef and Sweet Potato, which are two recipes she's been enjoying from Merrick. As her parent, I like that they use deboned meat and fish or poultry as the number one ingredient. I also like that they have these real ingredients and you can see them on the bag so you know what's in each one. And watching her do a little dance, especially with a Grammy's Paw Pie recipe, brings too much joy to my heart. Is there such a thing as too much joy? I'm not sure. But check out Merrick online or in your local pet store and look for their new packaging with real ingredients shown on the bag and inside it.
Hey. It's your stepbrother's girlfriend, the one with the pet rat. What's up? It's Allie Ward. Welcome back. Another episode of Ologies. Hi, guys. Happy continued summer to all of our friends in the Northern Hemisphere. Happy sweater weather to the Southern friends. Boy, howdy, do we have a special two-parter for you this week and next. Mars, are you ready? Okay, so that orange orb in the night sky, it's fodder for science fiction, and it's a place where billionaires ask themselves, can we go there when we ruin the planet we're on? It's kind of like a very dry rebound after we crash and burn our marriage with Earth. So maybe you love Mars. Maybe you don't know why people love Mars. Maybe you're like me. And until a few years ago, I was like, wait, is Mars a really hot, like fiery one because it's red and stuff? I had no idea. So this week, you're not only getting answers to the questions you feel too stupid to ask, but also some in-depth knowledge of what's coming up next from one of the most chill but deeply enthusiastic ologists I've ever gotten to sit down with. Whew! Okay, but first, I'll be quick. So this show would not be made without the patrons at patreon.com/ologies. You can join that club for as little as $1 a month, 25 cents a week. It lets you see what topics are coming up next. You can submit questions that I ask the ologist directly. Also, I say your name. Sometimes I pronounce it right. So this is an entirely independently made podcast. You guys make it happen. Another way to support the podcast, if you'd like, is to go to ologiesmerch.com. There's totes and hats and shirts and pins and just in, are you ready for this? Ologies swimsuits and backpacks. You can put science on your butts. It's very exciting. It's so exciting that I was like, I should have a sale. I should just have a sale. So if you enter the code CAMPOLOGIES, C-A-M-P, Ologies, at checkout, you'll get 10% off your whole order all through July. So if you decide you need an ologies bathing suit with bugs on your butt or boobs or whatever, go to ologiesmerch.com. Go get them. Also, your reviews and ratings keep it up in the charts for other people to discover. And I'm often writing this without a bra. I'm recording in my closet and your reviews make my week. And then I read them, such as Nikki the Nerd, who titled her review, I know you're reading this, Allie. She's not wrong. She said, this podcast is flippin' awesome. Every week, I now have new random factoids to spit out at people in awkward situations. So thank you, Allie, for being a geek and giving your fellow nerds a place to geek out together. I want to know how awkward your situations get. I told 100 people over a PA system about getting my hand stuck in an escalator, and the story did not go as well as I thought. Anyway, it happens. Okay, Areology. Let's get into it. So first off, Mars has a lot of iron in the soil, which makes it red, which makes it look like the solar system's big bloody eyeball. So hence, we named it after the god of war, Mars. So it's Ares in Greek mythology. And if you want to know more about Romans ripping off Greeks, listen to the mythology episode. So the Greeks were apparently kind of ambivalent toward Ares. They were like, he's jacked and he could kick ass in battle, but also he's kind of a dick. So the word Areology means study of Mars. So this ologist was introduced to me via email by my NASA friend, Casey. Hi, Casey. Hi, Christine. Casey's email between us simply said, do you need introductions? No, you do not. Then I received a message back from her saying that she listens to the podcast. She's been a patron since approximately 10 minutes after listening to her first episode. And that once she played Ologies with her friend where she pretended to be me and interviewed him. And she said, and I quote, I even talked about how dirty my hair was and put in asides. And let's just say I wanted to print up her email and frame it in something ornate and gold. So this interview was on. It was happening. So she grew up in the heart of LA. She has the most laid back textbook SoCal accent I have ever heard. Maybe the chillest areologist on any of the known planets. So I got off a plane from a work trip. I headed straight from the airport to a little conference room with squeaky chairs at Caltech in Pasadena to talk about like what Mars's deal is and the best sci-fi about it. Some super recent discoveries about moons and life, insane dust storms, the rovers they're building, and some of the best science dreams I've literally ever heard in my life. So please prepare for a journey into space and your rocky subconscious with Areologist Jennifer Booz. Drill. There's the microphone. You talk into it.
Okay.
This is gonna be fun.
No, it's great. You just run into it.
So we just talk regular, but with microphones.
Yeah, exactly. You just hold. You look at this. You're already a pro. You're already so good. At this point, I looked over and I saw that Jennifer was prepared with 6 printed sheets of questions from the Patreon page asked by listeners. Annotated by hand with her answers. She took the liberty of printing and answering them to prep for this.
Oh my God, you printed them out!
And answered them.
Oh my God.
I didn't want to be caught off guard.
This is great. This is the most prepared anyone's ever been. So we'll get to all those questions in part 2 of this series next week. But just know, she is a wonderful genius. Also, her website is so worth perusing. It's her name minus the vowels, so jnnfr.bz, and it features this pixely drawing of herself with purple hair and a turtle body floating in the cosmos, and it has photos of her work, links to significant space labs, and a ton of Easter eggs that you just have to click around to get into. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, I'm interviewing this very bizarrely amazing human being. I love her. Also, someone should clone her and populate a planet with a bunch more of her.
Your website's so spectacular, by the way. I love it so much.
I thought about making it more professional.
Nah.
But it was like, that's lame.
No, don't do that. Okay. So you study Mars.
Yes.
You're an areologist?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah, well, I think I'm a planetary geologist who studies Mars, but I study Mars, so I'm an areologist.
Okay, how long have you studied Mars? I'm going to get straight into it with basic bitch questions.
Okay, I started studying Mars when I got to Caltech, so it's been about 6.5 years.
So Dr. Jennifer Booz got her bachelor's and master's degree in geological and planetary sciences at this little startup school. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called MIT. Dude. And she just defended her geological PhD this April at Caltech. During her schooling, she just always dreamed of working with rocks from faraway lands. And it's so easy to spend your 20s focused on dipping pizza into nacho sauce and trying to get your brother to buy you drugs. But Jennifer was like, I gotta get my mitts on some space rocks.
When you got the call that you knew that you would get to work on this, like, for real.
Okay, so, like, maybe that moment would be when I was an undergrad. Mm-hmm. I applied to work in a lab that studied moon rocks.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be, like, my first time, like, my first real exposure. And when I got that that research position, it was like a summer position, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be touching moon rocks. Like, they're going to be in my possession. Like, I get to look at them every day. And like, they came from the moon. And I was reading Apollo transcripts, like when they found the rocks. And I was like, listening to the audio tapes, and I'm like, oh, that's when they found my rock. Oh my God. And like, and then one day I broke the rock and I was like, they're gonna fire me for sure. But they didn't, because they were like, y'all, rocks break.
Oh my God.
But that day when I got that job, I was just thrilled beyond belief that like someone trusted me with a rock that came from the moon that like an astronaut collected.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That must have just been such butterflies.
Yeah. That was like super, super exciting.
And what a good lesson to learn that, like, you can break a moon rock and life will go on.
Yeah. I remember that day I broke the rock and I just packed up my stuff and went to my dorm. I wrote an email to my advisor. I was like, I broke the rock. I'll be at my dorm. And I, like, went and I was, like, really upset. And I told the people in my hall. I was like, you guys, like, I definitely got fired just now. And, like, they all comforted me. But they were like, yeah, it sounds serious. And then my advisor was like, are you coming back? And, like... we've all broken rocks. Oh,
that's so cute.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh.
Did you like pack up your stuff like your desk area?
Yeah. Oh, no. Like, I'd only been there like a couple days, but I like packed up everything in the lab. I like made it all neat and I just like put it in my, I just went back. I just like went home and I was just waiting. He was at lunch. And it's like, if he hadn't been at lunch, I would have just gone to his office and probably sat down and like cried and be like, I broke a rock. But I didn't. I just sent him this email like, I broke a rock.
Oh, I just picture you walking across campus with like a box and like a mug that says, I'm loony for the moon. And like, just being like, I guess this isn't my office mug anymore.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's the cutest thing ever.
Yeah, it's great that in my experience, my advisors have been really understanding and like, you know, just... patient with me too.
I mean, it's nice that even scientists who study like the coolest shit even on other planets are all like, we're all earthlings.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah,
we're all just little humans.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cute.
And speaking of little humans, when Jennifer was just a wee one, her folks took her on tours of NASA's JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, and she just became deeply stoked looking at the models and the replicas of the rovers. These things bumble around Mars, scrubbing rocks and taking pictures, and eventually some models zap rocks with lasers. Right now, NASA is planning the next one. There's a 2020 unnamed rover to add to the four already up there. There's Sojourner, which kind of turned into a pumpkin, metaphorically, in 1997. And there's Spirit, which is stuck with a broken wheel, but up until a few years ago was bravely pinging back. And then there's Spirit's twin rover, Opportunity, which has been cruising around since 2004. And then there's the larger Curiosity. This is the one you've probably heard of a lot more recently. It's about the size of a Mini Cooper, so says NASA itself. And Curiosity landed in August of 2012, and it's been kind of bebopping around a crater named Gale for the last 6 years. So, fun fact, to help aerologists figure out how loose the soil is and how far the rover has traveled, the Curiosity tires have a few dots and dashes in the tread that spell out a secret message in Morse code. What does it spell? What does it spell? It spells JPL. Ding dong. So, I did some digging in the dusty soil of the internet, and I discovered that rover driver Mark Mimone, he's ginger-haired, jolly-looking, is responsible for that Morse code. And also, his cell number was just, like, listed. So, I did what any classy stranger would do at 8 p.m. on a Wednesday, and I texted him, just being like, hey, Mark, you totally don't know me, but my name is Allie Ward, and I just found out you're the one who proposed the JPL Morse code on the Curiosity tires. I'm just saying, hey, that was badass, super cool idea. But it's been 5 days and I have not received a response. So don't do that. So back to the Curiosity rover landing in 2012, which was an exciting time for space nuts.
So Curiosity rover.
Yeah.
We landed it, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Did you stay up late to watch it?
Yeah. I volunteered at a like a public event where they were showing the landing and stuff.
So what was, I didn't see the landing. I think it was in the middle of the night, right?
It was late. I feel like it was like 11 or something. I don't really remember though.
What was that moment like when it touched down? Like, what were you doing?
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
We were just all watching the screen, and I think there was lots of screaming and people crying and lots of general excitement.
Time to see where our curiosity will take us.
There's raw video of the NASA JPL control room when the Curiosity rover touches down safely. It's millions of dollars. So many millions of dollars. Thousands and thousands of hours and trials and failures and redos and teamwork to get this thing on fucking Mars. People in the control room, like bearded men, grown women, just all weeping with joy. Did I watch it and cry? Maybe I did. None of your business. Jennifer at the time was also pretty jazzed because that meant she didn't have to throw her unfinished PhD thesis into a burning garbage can.
My like PhD research was going to be using that data. So I was just like super nervous also that it maybe wouldn't work. And so, and then I was going to have to pick a new project, but I was like super excited also. So yeah. It was like high emotions night.
Like if it literally bit the dust, you'd be like, well, there goes my PhD. Yeah. What was your PhD project?
My PhD basically came down to like five projects related to Mars.
Wait a second. Before we even talk about what she was doing on Mars, let's just talk about Mars. Let's just back the hell up for 1 second.
As a planetary geologist, can you run me through... like, what the fuck is Mars? What's its deal? Why is it so dry? How cold is it? How big is it? Just tell me what we're working with here. Give me some specs. Like, if you were a dog and you're like, I don't know what Mars is, like, how would you start?
Okay. So Mars, you know, it's the next planet from our sun. So mm-hmm. it's going to be, like, colder. It's also a lot smaller.
At its closest, Mars is around 34 million miles. That's 55 million kilometers if you live in a country with a metric system and good healthcare away. So scale-wise, Mars is about half the size of Earth and has roughly one-third the gravity. One-third! So I looked up a few simulators of Mars gravity, and in one, there's this human in an orange onesie supported by slings taking these graceful leaps around an indoor track, kind of like a giant marionette in a prison jumpsuit. In another video, I saw what appeared to be a gaggle of French cosmonautical tourists taking a ride in a vomit comet, which is a seatless commercial jet that makes these roller coaster dips in flights and simulates lower gravity. I don't know. From what I can tell, less gravity looks fun as hell, with these middle-aged Parisians resorting to whoops. They're hooting like tiny happy donkeys or kids in a ball pit. Ah! So, Mars gravity, take your weight, divide it by three. That is your bounding happy space pony weight.
It's like atmosphere is super thin right now, but in the past it had a thick atmosphere and there was water on it for sure. Like we have evidence for like streams and lakes and all sorts of like things like that. And it was a lot warmer because it had an atmosphere and it used to have a magnetic field like we had on Earth, but it's dead, doesn't have one anymore.
How do magnetic fields die?
The planet Mars, because it's smaller, it can like cool down a lot quicker. On Earth, it's like hot down in our core, and we have got iron spinning around, and it's also like a big planet, and so, but Mars doesn't have like all those things, and so it's like its core is like just not putting out that kind of motion anymore. Oh. And so we're not getting a magnetic field anymore.
I had no idea that was even a thing. I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah. And the moon used to have a magnetic field too. And it doesn't have one anymore.
The Mars moon.
No.
Our moon?
Earth's moon. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So I studied the moon before I studied Mars.
Oh God. I got so many moon questions. Oh, that's going to be another episode. Does Mars have moons?
It has two moons, Phobos and Deimos.
Okay.
There's like some debate about how the moons form, but I think most people think they're like captured asteroids. So they're really small moons and not like ours. And I think from the surface, they look more like planets.
So if you're on Mars,
yeah,
do you see two moons in the sky at the same time?
I think you can, but But they're so small. I think that they look more like planets.
Okay. They just are like little dimmy dots.
Yeah. I don't think they don't look like our moon for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it, you know, have you ever cracked an egg and you got a double yolk and you're like, it's my lucky day.
Side note, how lucky is it to get a double yolk or egg? I had to stop and check because I was like, how rare is that? Maybe it's happened to me twice in my life. Anyway, some traditions say it's really good luck or that someone in the family is going to get knocked up with twins. But according to Norse legends, it's an ominous sign that death will visit. So what's actually happening, like biologically? So in about 1 in every 1,000 eggs, a hen just boops out an extra yolk. She's like, boop. Usually younger hens do it more frequently. I don't know. Maybe their bodies are just like, hell yeah, I'm a baby machine. Let's go. As for Mars's double moons, some hot goss just came out this past week. Jennifer emailed me that Phobos, which she described as a 26 kilometer wide lumpy turd ball, or a Cocoa Puff, may not have been a captured asteroid, but possibly it was formed out of a cloud of dust that was left over from a giant impact, kind of like our own beloved moon. And that possibly, possibly, Phobos has formed many times over Mars history, and it just periodically crashes into the surface, forms a dust cloud around Mars again, and then recreates itself into a moon, and then crashes again, forms itself anew again, but smaller, over and over and over. Which is like the most poetic shit I have ever heard. And also, that's more comebacks than Britney, and I respect that. Now, the decreasing orbit of Phobos, this tendency to kind of decrease and decrease and crash, convinced even Carl Sagan at one point that Phobos was just a hollow satellite put in place by aliens. And I love the idea that maybe Carl Sagan just thought of it kind of like a backyard shed. Like aliens would just store holiday decorations in tubs or like coffee cans filled with nails and IKEA Allen wrenches. Maybe a lawnmower that the Martians haven't used in a few billion years because landscaping got a little parched up there.
Sounds like that. But moons. And so it's dry.
Yeah.
So what do they think happened to make Mars such a dust bowl?
So it got dry, basically. It used to have water, but because it's so much smaller, its atmosphere like got lost, basically. It doesn't have as much gravity like pulling it in. Mm. And it also like didn't have a magnetic field anymore, and like we say our magnetic field protects us. Mm-hmm. And so like the atmosphere just got like stripped away over time by like the solar wind and just like other atmospheric loss processes. And mm-hmm. so it just like lost its atmosphere, got drier and drier, and then now it has a thin atmosphere and everything's just dusty.
Does the water evaporate into the solar system?
Yeah, it just gets like lost, and I guess it like, yeah, basically.
I wonder where it goes.
Yeah, I don't know. Just like out.
Out there. Can you imagine just oceans just kind of like misting around?
Maybe. I think it's like probably really scattered apart.
Okay.
It's like probably just a gas.
So we have a super dusty planet.
Yeah.
Why is it red?
It has a lot of iron. Okay. It's like rusty.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And same as like Utah.
Yeah.
Similar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
In a lot of ways.
Why do you think people fucking love Mars so much?
Because it is awesome. I mean, it's like... I agree with you. It's like it could have had aliens on it. It's mm-hmm. like it's like a little Earth that was like way cooler in the past and now it's like a little dead. But like it has so much potential and it's like so similar to Earth in a lot of ways that people are like, we could go there if, you know, we screwed up our own planet. It's so like geologically diverse, you know, it's mm-hmm. got evidence for like maybe an ocean, it's got lakes, it's got deltas and this crazy sand dunes, and like there's just like so many cool things you can look at on Mars that it's just fascinating. I think that's why people love it. And there's just so much potential for like thinking about life and aliens and space travel and being on another planet and fantasies related to that.
And Martians, like literal Martians.
Yeah.
Hear me out. Maybe Mars functions for us Earthlings as like the idea of like an old cabin in Joshua Tree. Like it's far away, but not that far away. And it's old and you don't really know why. It's kind of like decrepit, but it has a charm to it. And maybe you could escape there if shit went down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's,
and it's
kind
dusty
of,
too.
And it's dusty. Yeah. It's kind of like our old vintage homesteader cabin in the desert.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So what parts of this chilly desert are we really poking around? Now, the Curiosity rover landed in a crater, Gale Crater, named for Walter Frederick Gale, who was an Australian banker by name, but he was a real space dweeb by night. So Gale Crater is this huge dent in Mars, and it's filled with a mountain of perhaps wind-whipped debris that's taller than Mount Rainier. It looks like if you piled a bunch of brown sugar into a shallow bowl, or like a little tiny tuft of lint in a belly button. Now, why do we care about this crater? Because maybe it was a lake?
Why did we put Curiosity in the crater?
That's where the lake was.
Okay.
So yeah, and that's where the cool stuff was.
Got it. So if there were going to be like any old beer cans or like signs that people had a party there, we would find it in the bottom of what used to be a lake, or we'd be like, there were maybe some old fish in here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's like a basin, so stuff's gonna collect there. And we had seen from orbit that there were like layers that looked like they could have been from a lake or something wet, or people actually really debated what the layers were. And so it was just people were curious from many different perspectives, and so that's why we went there. But picking like the landing site is like a multi-year thing with like hundreds of people involved and stuff. Ooh. So
do people debate ferociously? Are they like in a boardroom, like over late night takeout food, being like, no, we're gonna put it in this basin?
Yeah, so the landing site process is really a interactive process, and it's actually people in the general public can participate too. But so like the 2020 rover, we're having landing site workshops right now, and basically the way it works is like people who study Mars or even anybody can propose a landing site. They could be like, I want to go to this place, but then they have to make their argument for it. And so they have these workshops that are like yearly or bi-yearly, and people present what they found out about their spot and like why we should go there, and then like literally we vote, like we raise our hands, people at the workshop, and then it's like a popular opinion. But then there's a little bit of influence from like NASA, you know, headquarters.
So
like,
it's the wait, so it is decided by a hand raise, and then NASA's like, I approve.
You know, say there's like 100 people suggesting sites.
Mm-hmm.
Like the hand raising process will narrow it down to like 8.
Okay.
And then once it gets to like those few landing sites, then NASA starts being like, hey, now we have to consider like how feasible is it to go there? Like, are there other engineering constraints? And so people might be super psyched about a place for one reason, but like if it's not going to answer the question that it's a goal of the mission, then they're going to be like, no, we need to stay on track.
And yeah. What did you think of the Opportunity rover? Do you have a favorite between Curiosity and Opportunity?
I
mean, I know that Opportunity did bite the dust, and it's just chilling somewhere, right?
Spirit. Yeah.
What did I say? Opportunity.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
What did I tell you? I'm gonna learn. I went into this being like, I'm gonna learn a lot about Mars.
The way, like one way that I remember that, well, many ways, but like free spirit, like spirit stuck. You want to free it.
Oh, no. Oh, so what happened? Run me through what happened with Spirit. What's going on with Curiosity? I know there have been some dust storms. People are super worried about the dust storms in Curiosity right now.
Yeah.
And what they're finding out.
And then there was the twin rovers, Spirit and Opportunity. And so Spirit got stuck, like its wheel stopped spinning, and it was like dragging it for a while. I wasn't involved in this mission, so I only know like a high level public kind of thing. But so it was like dragging its wheel around, and eventually it couldn't get out of its hole, you know.
Oh no.
But Opportunity is still operational. So yeah, but the dust storm's super relevant right now because there's a dust storm on Mars.
Right.
And so this is not the first time that there's been a dust storm with the rovers. And what in the past, actually, when there was a global dust storm, they were worried that we may never see Spirit and Opportunity again because they use solar panels for their stuff, for power. But actually the dust storm like cleaned them off a bit.
No.
When the dust cleared, yeah, they had, because as they're moving around, dust is a major problem for our work.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it's just like, it's really fine and it lands everywhere and it's like, just like a dirty apartment kind of, and it's like hard. But if you're looking at the surface, it's like hard to to see stuff underneath the dust sometimes. And so actually, yeah, cleaned them off the solar panels.
And they're doing okay right now.
Yeah. So Opportunity is like not operational right now because it can't get enough sun.
Okay.
But it's still alive. Like it's still sending pings like, hey, I'm here, but I can't do anything.
And is it because of like seasonal things happening there?
Because the dust is in the sky is like blocking the sun from going there.
How big is this dust storm and why does Mars have these insane dust storms?
It's a really dusty planet. You know, it doesn't have like an ocean to catch the dust that's floating around. And then there is an atmosphere. And so the dust is like really fine. It can get picked up and like just entrained in the atmosphere for a long time. Ooh. Yeah. And but Curiosity is also witnessing this dust storm. Mm-hmm. Like when we look at pictures of the sky that it sends us, we can see that the sky is much darker.
Ooh.
But Curiosity uses like nuclear power.
It does?
Yeah, it's not using solar panels. So it's like it can still function with a dust storm.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
How much fuel does it have?
A lot.
How long will it live?
For more years.
Okay.
I don't know the exact number of years, but like, so the battery, it has a battery that it like can recharge and stuff. I don't know the details of how it's powered, but it's mm-hmm. Some sort of decay. Ooh. Yeah, it'll live for a while. We'll be able to use it like the really power hungry things less in okay. the future, but right now it's like, yeah,
it's chugging along.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. I thought they were all solar.
No, yeah. And the next one it'll be similar to Curiosity.
Okay, and that's the 2020.
Yeah.
What's the 2020 gonna peep? What's it looking at? Where's it gonna land?
So we don't know yet where it's gonna land. It's like down to three sites.
Okay.
And
do you get to vote with your arm?
You know, I think that at this stage, I'm not sure how much the like my individual opinion matters as opposed to like the people in charge of the rover. Like, okay. I think they have a lot of say now. But there are still there's still landing site workshops. So people are still working on the landing sites and presenting. And then the public and scientists can still go and like ask questions and stuff like that.
So, side note, I wanted to see if any workshops remain. And yes, in October of 2018, NASA will be conducting the fourth and final three-day workshop to determine the landing site for the 2020 rover. Now, according to a page up at marsnext.jpl.nasa.gov, I'll put a link in the show notes, they'll be gabbing about the potential of three remaining candidate sites. All possible sites where life could have existed and or there's a lot of evidence for rocks and fluids having interacted. So this workshop, I picture it taking place in some secret marble hall, but it's just happening at a Hilton in what's being called Los Angeles North. But hello, it's just Glendale. That's like calling New Jersey New York East. But who am I to judge? Oops. Then I went on Yelp to see how this Hilton was, and reviews are mixed. Some people think the pool is too cold and the walls are too thin, and one person gave it 3 stars because, quote, the restrooms needed to be restocked due to my stall not having toilet seat covers, and the lady in my stall asking for toilet paper, lol. Perhaps they should have sent a rover to this Hilton to see if it was the best place to host the conference. Either way, it's going to be exciting. And now you have all the info you need to choose the rover spot on Mars.
And so one of the big ideas behind like past Mars life is that it was like microbes maybe living in like cracks in rocks and stuff. Mm-hmm. And so there's also in that area, there's like also like volcanism and stuff. A wide variety of rocks there and a wide variety of ages, which is crucial because Mars was like probably habitable a lot old in its like early history.
How long ago do you think Mars was probably habitable?
Right.
Are we talking like 5 billion years ago or like 30,000 billion years ago?
Oh, no, a long time ago. Okay. Like billions of years.
Okay,
like
just
3
checking.
Billion years or something. Like, I mean, maybe there's like, there is still some fluid activity mm-hmm. More recently, but it's like such small amounts that like these would be like really lonely bugs.
No.
Yeah. There's a big group of people that want to send a rover back to the same spot where Spirit is, which is kind of a cute thought in some ways.
It but is
a lot,
cute.
A lot of people are like, no, we want to go somewhere new.
Right.
But that spot, there's like hydrothermal activity. So, which is like on Earth where a lot of people think life might have started here. So that's why there's a big argument to go back there too.
Like primordial Martian soup?
Yeah.
Kind of?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that there's any hope of sending the 2020 rover and it like bumps butts with the Spirit and Spirit's like, I'm back, and like gets its groove back?
Oh, you know, that'd be kind of cute if they sent it a little toolbox to like fix its brand.
Right?
I don't know. I think that it may not go like to that exact precise spot, but it could. I mean, it's possible, but Okay. Yeah, it's like a highly debated thing if it should even be considered, because we're like, it's a big planet, we should go somewhere new, you know?
Right. Yeah, I do feel like, you know, I've dated people that want to go to the same restaurant like every single night.
Yeah.
You're like, come on, dude.
Yeah.
A new place opened up down the block. Let's try it out. I feel like we can branch out.
Yeah. I'm excited to check out some new spots.
So day to day, Jennifer works on the computer. She looks at images. She gets beamed from another fucking planet. Totally normal. Or she looks at how light hits the surface of certain materials and what they're composed of. And then, of course, fulfilling Bibi, Jennifer's dreams, she works on Mars rovers.
And then another thing that I do often is I'm on the Curiosity rover team. And so some of my days are spent doing operations for the rover. And so we figure out like, where's the rover today? Like, what's cool around us? Like, where are we going to shoot our laser?
Oh my God, this is your stuff. Life.
Yeah. And so there'll be like telecons and stuff. And so I'll be on the on a telecon like most of the day.
P.S. I had to email Jennifer to ask if a telecon is a fancy word for a phone call, and she said yeah. But also, you share computer screens, so my guess is it's kind of like a role-playing game, but instead of your cousin in another state having her elves attack you, it's a space scientist being like, check out these sweet-ass rocks!
Planning out the making the rover's little agenda for it.
Is that crazy to you that like you came to JPL, looked at rovers when you were a kid, and now you're like, I'm on the team deciding where to point the lasers on Mars? Like, is that bananas?
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. Like, I definitely think back to those when I was being little and seeing the rovers at JPL. That's pretty cool to me. Then another cool part about being a Mars geologist is that we often study analog sites. And so we'll go to places on Earth that remind us of Mars and study them and think about like, oh, if we were on Mars, like, how would this be different? Or like, we'll ask a question like, Iceland is like a place where people go to study Mars, or also like the dry valleys of Antarctica. People go there.
Really?
To study Mars. Yeah. And
what is it about those places, and specifically Iceland? Like, I know a lot of people love Mars and are thinking about going to Iceland. Where in Iceland do you go if you want to pretend like you're on Mars?
I don't know. I couldn't say like a specific place, but like there's like lots of rift evidence of like volcanic rifting. And so a lot of just like hydrothermal interaction kind of stuff. So like where water and hot rock met.
And there are volcanoes on Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mars is like super volcanic, super basaltic. So basalt is like what's coming out on Iceland, which is why people go there. And then it's like cold too. Iceland's super cold and Mars is really cold. So that's like, you got kind of a lot of the stuff in common already.
A correlate there.
Yeah.
Would you go to Mars if given the opportunity?
I think it depends on the circumstances of it, but like, yeah,
business class. You're at least going business class.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's like, is there like a colony on Mars that's like already established? Then like, yeah, but like, or if I'm going to be like a cool geologist on Mars, like, yeah, for sure. But like,
one of the first? Are you like,
maybe if I was like a little older,
right? You just eked out what you could on Earth, and you're like, all right, I'm ready to retire on Mars.
Yeah, I think I would just like weigh it out and be like. Like, am I ready to die? Then I would say, if I'm like, okay, yeah, that'd be kind of cool, then yeah.
It's like moving to Arizona.
Yeah.
I'm ready to have the last phase of my life. When you were trying to figure out what you wanted to do, like, with your life, like, your job, at what point did you know where to steer yourself? At what point were you like, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to study this, I'm going to work there?
Yeah, only very recently.
Really?
Yeah, because I was super into science in general, but I had a really hard time, like, figuring out what exact science I wanted to study. I, like, love nature, I love camping and stuff like that. So, like, I also love like weird biology thing. So it's like into a lot of stuff like environmental science. And I didn't get exposure to geology until pretty late, like until basically my freshman year in college. And then I was like, oh, dang, you can go camping and do science. Like, so that's like how I got into geology. But then I was like, I didn't even know planetary geology. Like I knew about their rovers and stuff, but like I didn't really realize how big a field it was. And then I just like slowly got like more and more into it, and I was like,
this is sick.
And it's only like now that I just graduated, I'm like thinking now I need to make a plan for what I want to do in the future, and like strategic like projects to work on strategically for things that I know will crop up. So like getting involved with the 2020 rovers, like I want to continue to be involved with that kind of research. And so like I've been doing some stuff related to the 2020 rover calibration and things like that. Ooh. Just to like get my name out there, you know.
Yeah, you're like, come to me for your calibration and rover needs.
Yeah, and then like participating in the landing site workshops. I want to be like, it's like super exciting to me now to know like all this background, because when I got involved with Curiosity, I didn't know as much about Gale Crater as like I know about the potential landing sites for 2020. So mm-hmm. it's like exciting to be involved from an early stage.
Oh, because hear me out. Is it like watching The Bachelor from the beginning? You really care about who's in the last couple shows?
Yeah, probably. I've never had that experience, but I imagine that's probably the case.
Lauren, will you accept this rose?
It's just in like an investment in the playoffs. You know what I mean? And then when it comes to the World Series, you're like, this matters even more to me because I've been watching since the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
I get that. So now that you're in the stage with 2020 where they're deciding where to land it, decisions are being made. And so it's going to mean even more when you see that through to completion, to the end, where they actually, the rover's there at the site that you all helped decide on. Yeah, that's going to be enormous. That's huge.
Yeah, it's really exciting.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Listen, I'm recording this on a Friday night. I'm about to go to a party. A party, you say? I thought the same thing. And sometimes it can be easy to ignore our social battery and kind of spread ourselves a little thin. Especially with spring mingling. You're outdoors. You're hanging out. What is the right amount of socializing for you and for me? And how do we recharge, I ask myself, and also you. You know what helps? You know what's helped me? Therapy. And I've used BetterHelp. Therapy can help you check in and say, how am I feeling right now? Are you feeling lonely and actually going out and seeing friends would be good for you? Are you isolating because you're depressed? What's going on? And I have to say, as someone who has been in therapy, it has definitely helped me check in with myself. We all have gauges on how we're doing, but some of us ignore them. A lot of us. I like BetterHelp because it's very easy onboarding. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient and flexible. You can suit it to your schedule. You fill out a brief questionnaire. You get matched with a licensed therapist. If you were not vibing with them, you can switch at any time. No additional charge or drama. So get in touch with yourself and find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. You can visit betterhelp.com/ologies today to get 10% off your first month. So that's betterhelp, HELP.com/ologies. Have you tried different meal kit options and you're like, what else is out there? You might want to try Home Chef. What's cool about Home Chef, you'd like to ask? Well, they have fresh ingredients, chef-designed recipes, delivered to your doorstep. We love a doorstep delivery. They got classic meal kits, pre-portioned ingredients, easy instructions. They got quick recipes ready in less than 30 minutes. They have oven-ready kits with pre-chopped stuff. You can also do quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes. Home Chef has you and the entire fam covered for good meals without the hassle. And I mentioned on this podcast that your pod mother and I just had our kitchen ripped out. So we don't have a kitchen. We have a microwave in the living room. And that means, hey, Home Chef, we'll take those microwave meals that assemble in minutes. Thanks very much. Home Chef is like in a bad dating game of meal kits out there. I'm your soulmate. So for a limited time, Home Chef is offering listeners 18 free meals, plus free shipping on your first box and free dessert for life. You're welcome. At homechef.com/ologies. So that's homechef.com/ologies for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. Homechef.com/ologies. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert. So I'm about to do a bunch of travel for Ologies, recording things in different cities. And you know what I did for myself? I got a Quince cashmere suit, a two-piece.
Who does that? Me, because of Quince. They have 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50. They have organic cotton sweaters. They have washable silk tops. They have 14 karat gold jewelry. But the best part is that all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with these top factories, and then they cut out the cost of the middleman, and then they pass that savings on to you and me. And Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical and responsible manufacturing practices and great fabrics and finishes. I love that. They have amazing classic clothes that are quality and timeless. And so that helps me when I'm packing to know I can have almost a capsule wardrobe where everything looks good, and also some of it's cashmere. So indulge in some affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/ologies for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ologies to get free shipping and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/ologies. Oh, hi, it's me, the lady that checks a bunch of scholarly articles before she believes anything, Allie Ward. And I feel like we are similar in that we have a fair amount of skepticism and we like to dive deep and find out what the actual facts are. This is why when it comes to any kind of supplements, I enjoy Ritual, which is a female-founded B Corp, meaning that they're holding themselves accountable to not just the company, but also to the health of people in our planet. And their clinically backed Essential for Women 18 Plus multivitamin has these high-quality, traceable key ingredients in bioavailable forms that are clean. Only about 1% of supplement brands are USP verified, and Ritual is one of them. So I like being able to trust what I'm putting in my body. From an aesthetic standpoint, I'll also tell you that Ritual are beautiful little vitamins. They look like lava lamps and they taste like mint. So taking my Ritual is part of my, I guess, morning ritual. That's probably why they named it that and I didn't even think about it. Anyway, no more shady business. Ritual's Essential for Women 18 Plus is a multivitamin you can actually trust. So get 25% off your first month at ritual.com/ologies. You can start Ritual or add Essential for Women 18 Plus to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/ologies for 25% off. Down the hatch.
Do you dream about Mars?
Yeah, I've had lots of dreams about Mars.
You have? What happens in them?
So, like, some of them are nightmares.
Really?
Yeah.
Just heads up, I'm so, so, so glad I asked this question because the payoff was fucking enormous.
Well, I had one that was, like, kind of like a... It was like we were on Mars and I requested an image be taken of like a crater wall by the rover. Mm-hmm. And like so the image came down and it was like not that interesting.
Aww.
And then somebody was like, do you know how much money we spent on that image? And then like they guilt tripped me about it. And
that a was nightmare.
Like, that was like a Mars nightmare. All my dreams are really bizarre. Like I had other dreams where like I went to Mars and like landed in a crater and there was like a lake there. And then there was like an escaped convict that was a stowaway on my rocket ship. Like... Yeah, so
you're like, what are you doing here?
And he's like, none of your business.
Yeah, exactly. Like really, I mean, just like weird dreams like that. And then rolls. I had a dream one time, that's like maybe my weirdest dream, that I gave birth to a moon rock. And like in my dream world, you could have a boy or a girl or a rock. Like those are your options. And then the doctors took my rock baby from me. And like if you had a boy or a girl, you know, they just like weigh it on like the little scale. But if you have a rock baby, they put it like in a mass spectrometer. So they put my rock baby in their instrument, and then they're like, Miss Booze, we have to tell you something. Like, are you ready for this? And I was like, what's wrong with my rock, baby? And they're like, it's a moon rock. And then I looked at my boyfriend at the time and I was like, are you an alien? And his mom was like, I never told you you're an alien. That was my weirdest dream I ever had.
Everything about this is the best. That's amazing. Were you so disappointed when you woke up to real life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a nightmare also. No.
I can't believe these things happen in the dream world. And like, I'd never know this unless I put a microphone in your face. Yeah.
I have really vivid dreams. I used to keep a journal.
I don't blame you. You got to publish these things. Speaking of publishing in Mars.
Yeah.
Let's talk about The Martian.
Cliff Notes. Best-selling book that became a movie, dude stranded on Mars, has to survive, says things like...
I'm gonna have to science the shit out of this.
Okay, yeah.
So, Andy Weir wrote a book, self-published.
Mm-hmm. I read it.
You read it. He was not a Mars scientist.
No.
Just a fan.
Yeah.
It was fanfic about Mars, right?
Yeah.
But it got people kind of pumped about Mars.
Yeah.
How did you feel about it as someone who works on Mars?
I was excited about it. I enjoyed the book, and I like people getting excited about Mars. I love when people, you know, ask me questions and I can answer them. And I enjoyed the book. And for the most part, like, I wasn't, like, appalled by it. So yeah, it was good. There are other books like similar kind of in the same line that are super accurate about
really?
Mars.
Really? Yeah. What's some of the best sci-fi about Mars?
I think like the Kim Stanley Robinson series, like Red Mars, Blue Mars, Green Mars. Like
okay.
The first book, Red Mars. He just did like a ton of research on like what's actually happening on Mars. And he paints these landscapes that are actually incredibly accurate. And the way he describes them is just like incredible and beautiful. And he did a great job. Of like painting Mars scenes.
Good on him, man. So this is a trilogy about Mars and making it habitable. And long story short, I went down a rabbit hole about author Kim Stanley Robinson, who is not a girl Kim, but a boy Kim. And he's married to a chemist. And sometimes he goes by his wife's last name, which is cute. Also, he lives in Davis, California. He prefers to write out of doors. Anyway, back to Andy Weir's The Martian, which I did read on a plane, and confession. I will say I did read The Martian and I cried.
Really?
A couple times. I was like, they're coming to get you, buddy. And I felt very emotional. I didn't think the movie did quite as good a job, but what are you going to do?
Also, I had to stop to look this up, but scientists say that the reason we're more likely to cry on an airplane than on the ground may be due to hypoxia or lack of oxygen due to air pressure, because being on a plane is equivalent to being at an altitude of around 8,000 feet. Isn't that crazy? Even with the pressurized cabin. Or it may be the emotional liability of unfamiliar surroundings. And humans tend to cry when we're a little scared to promote emotional bonding with others to increase our safety. So the next time you find yourself like sobbing at a tender moment of a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, like blame hypoxia. Okay, let's get back to Mars rovers.
Okay, tell me a little bit about how the rovers are gathering. They gather rock samples, correct?
Yeah.
Now,
well, they're not like gathering them.
Tell me how they do their business.
Okay, so they like take pictures, mm-hmm. And they zap them with lasers, and they the pictures are not just like regular pictures though. They have like many wavelengths of light sometimes, and so mm-hmm. you can tell more from than you could just of a regular picture. And then they drill them sometimes,
ooh.
And they put them in like on the Curiosity rover, there's like a instrument that's like an oven.
Mm-hmm.
So they put their rock powder that they drilled in the oven and they heat it up and then they measure stuff that comes off of it and they learn about different compounds that are in the rover. And then there's another thing where they like vibrate the rock and they can like tell what the crystals, like different mineral crystals are.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And then do they just dump it? Do they just blow it off when they're like done with you?
Yeah. But for the most part, yeah, they drill it and then they like analyze the it's called the dump pile.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. They like dump out the stuff they drilled and then they look at the dump pile.
Oh.
And we have like an arm on the rover. And mm-hmm. so like we'll put the arm up close and like look at it. And then, yeah, it's just like a lot of imaging. And then a couple of different like scientific instruments. So that's like for the geology, but then there's also like stuff for atmospheric detections like that sense the winds and like gases and stuff like that.
And so is there like a feed coming through that just is like dee 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 dee, like this is what we're gathering?
We get, okay, so the way it works is kind of cool. We relay with satellites that orbit Mars, so we send stuff to the satellites and mm-hmm. the satellites send it down to the rover and the rover sends it back to the satellite and back to us.
So to recap, they send information up to the satellites send it down to the rover sends it back to the satellite, and back to us. The satellite's like our mutual friend who has cell service when we don't, and we keep being like, oh my god, ask the rover to take a soil sample. And the rover's like, holy shit, satellite, tell them the soil is so red, I can't even.
And so we get our data in like batches. So in a way, yes, but it's not like constantly coming down. We'll get like data deliveries.
Okay.
So at like certain specified times, yeah.
Ooh. And yeah. are you ever waiting for one, like knowing like we should get a date of delivery in like 12 minutes?
Yeah, so. No, that's how planning works sometimes, where like we might not get data until like a certain place in our planning cycle, and so we'll be waiting for something to come down to like figure out how interesting something was, if we want to like keep looking at it or if we want to move on. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What do you think the weirdest thing is about Mars's surface?
Maybe like the sand dunes. They're really weird.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they look like sand dunes, like when people ride camels through Egypt and they're like, look at my vacation?
There's like a large variety of sand dunes on Mars, and like some of them are like dusty and some of them are less dusty, and then like sometimes we can see the sand dunes moving, which is kind of cool, like with the winds on Mars. Ooh. But then like something like a dust devil will pick up, and then we can like see active motion.
What are some of the weird pictures that come back? Because I think I went down a Google hole once of like shit that may or may not have been placed there by aliens.
Yeah.
What are some weird pictures?
Okay, so like the most famous thing, I have two examples.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
Okay, so like first was like Percival Lowell. You know, he looked at Mars through his telescope in Lowell Observatory in Flagstaff.
Percival Lowell, P.S., was a Boston aristocrat, a.k.a. a hella rich guy, in the late 1800s, and he was so passionate about astronomy that he founded observatories with all of his monies. He also had a formidable mustache, and he had some theories that were well-intentioned, but turned out to be crackpot.
Mm-hmm. And he thought he saw canals. Like they're like rivers and stuff he thought he saw, and so he made all these like drawings of like what he thought was like a Mars civilization. He was sure there was like people on Mars, and so but like when we got better pictures, it was like, no, there's no canals that are built there. You know, so that's like, that was like, people were so psyched on that.
Yeah.
You know, and he was super psyched on it, but then we got like higher resolution stuff and we were like, oh no, it turns out it's not the case.
Oh man.
And then well, like when we our first images, you might have heard of the face on Mars.
Yes.
Yeah, so it looks really creepy, like I'm not gonna lie. It looks like a like a giant guy and he's angry and he's looking at you.
If you haven't seen this, there are images taken in the Cydonia region of Mars that appear to be an alien face monument staring into the void of the cosmos. But it looks like someone left a Halloween mask in the bushes for a year, and then you took a picture of it with a razor phone at night from 300 feet away. Also, sadly, it's just called the face on Mars. Like, no one even named it Luke or Denise or anything, which is kind of a bummer. Also, the tendency to see faces in inanimate objects like light sockets and toast, etc., is called pareidolia. I follow an account on Instagram called Facebook, like F-A-C-E-D book, and it's a collection of things that look like they have faces. It's like rocks and clothespins and wood grains. And it creeps me out so hard, but I can't unfollow it because it's like a good creepy. Anyway, Facebook if you're interested. Okay, the face on Mars. When we got better cameras, we zoomed in on this shit. And.
But then when we like took a higher resolution image, like many years later, it's like, oh, it's just a little mountain that's got some shadows on it. Like,
damn it.
Yeah. So those are really weird. The polar caps of Mars, they're like carbon dioxide and water and dust, and like when they melt or like evaporate, they make like crazy morphologies, like weird pits and like stuff that it'll just like the you have a hard time, like your brain has a hard time figuring out what's up and down.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at these pictures, and then they just look so alien.
Oh, how much water is on Mars and when did we find it? I say we as though I had anything to do with it.
Currently on Mars, there's not a lot of water. There's like some water, like liquid water, just like in pores of rocks and like buried, basically not really exposed on the surface. But there's like water ice in the caps. And when did we find it? I think probably the best, like when we started getting these early images that showed like channels, there was no like solid evidence that it was formed by water, but people were like, it looks like it was formed by water. And then, you know, we get more and more info on it. Yeah.
How fast does our knowledge of other planets accumulate? Like, have we just gone crazy with information in the last like 20, 30, 40 years?
Yeah, we right now we're in a time when like we have got recently and are still getting lots of information about planets from different satellites that we've sent, but like we're about to enter a time when we don't have a lot of stuff going out now. And you know, like a lot of the missions that went out, they took like many years to get to where they were going. Mm-hmm. And so now like either now or like recently they've gone and done their stuff. And so, but we haven't sent out a steady stream. And so we're about to enter like a little bit of a lull.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And how long, just refresh for me, does it take for us to get something to Mars?
So like the data transmission, I think it's like 7 minutes one way.
And then what about an object?
Oh, okay. So like it depends on like where Mars is in its orbit and stuff like that. But I think it's like 3 months or
okay.
something.
Okay. That seems really fast.
Yeah, I think that's like for a really fast thing, but you can take way longer also.
Sure, you can send it ground or something.
Yeah.
Not prime it.
Yeah. I want to mention that we also have Mars rocks, though.
Tell me about Mars rocks.
That they came to Earth, like meteorites that like were on the surface and then they got ejected and then we can study them too.
How does that happen? How does a Mars meteorite just get flung off the planet and just go and just land here?
Yeah. So like a big rock mm-hmm. flies through space and then hits Mars and then it makes a crater on Mars and it shoots off rocks. Some of the rocks land on Mars, but some of them get shot off like straight up in the air mm-hmm. and like they reach Mars, you know, escape velocity, and they're just flying through space. And then they fly through space for like millions of years, probably. Mm-hmm. And then they land on Earth as another impact. And then we collect them.
It goes from a meteor to once it hits, it becomes a meteorite. Is
yeah,
that right?
I think that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So once it touches down, it's like, boop, I just turned into a meteorite.
Yeah.
How do you know what they are?
Yeah, so we now have like classes because we can like kind of lump them into like these are similar to these other ones, and then but then there are some that are like bizarre, and so like that's like how we found out that we had like a group of meteorites that different from the rest, and people started to wonder if they could have been come from Mars because the minerals in them were similar to what we thought we knew was on Mars, and mm-hmm. then so this group was like finally confirmed to be from Mars when we sent a lander to Mars and we measured the atmosphere mm-hmm. and like isotopes in the atmosphere, like the different ratios were the same ratios that were like trapped in bubbles in these rocks. And so we're like, yep, they're from Mars.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then where do you put the meteorites? Like, do they get stored under, like, lock and key because yeah. they're so rare?
Yeah, they, well, it depends who found them.
Okay.
So, like, NASA has, like, missions to Antarctica to collect meteorites and, like, to some deserts, I think. And so those are property of NASA and you can, like, apply to study them, but you can only ever borrow them. They are owned by NASA and they're stored at Johnson Space Center in Houston.
Woo!
Yeah. But, like, people can also find a meteorite on their own, and then I think that's their meteorite, depending on where they found it.
How often do aerologists, planetary geologists, have someone say, yo, I found a meteorite, and you're like, that's a lump of granite? Like, how often does that happen?
A lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. People, like, bring me rocks all the time and ask me if they're meteorites.
How do you know that they're not?
Sometimes I can just like be like, that's an earth rock because it looks like yeah, like I'm like, that's a lump of granite. So like meteorites often have like a fusion crust, which is when it's all glassy on the outside of the rock, and that's like from heating up when it entered the atmosphere. So that's like one thing that we can tell. And then like there are certain things that we only see in meteorites, like this cool metal pattern called a Vidmunds-Dottun pattern, and mm-hmm. it's like a crazy like kind of etching looking thing.
By the by, these crosshatch patterns in meteorites are caused by, apparently, nickel iron crystals, and they're credited to an Australian painter named, ready, Count Alois von Beck Wilmenstaten, which honestly would be such a great name for a cat. Anyway, he discovered the patterns. He was like, whoa, look at these patterns. So we named them Wilmenstaten in his honor. And then we found out later that a British guy with a way more boring name, William Thomson, discovered them like 4 years earlier, but no one cared. So some people call these pretty geometric meteorite patterns Thomson structures, out of fairness. But I think we should just say Vidmund Thomson
or Williamstaden. People into meteorites, let me know, because I'll have a press conference about it. Note, I will be wearing a monocle. Just for flair.
Do you have a favorite meteorite? Like, yeah. A favorite? You do? What is it? I love that there is zero hesitation.
Yeah, it's a meteorite that I studied for one of my PhD projects. It's a Martian meteorite.
Okay.
It's called ALH84001.
Sure it is.
Which is named from the Allen Hills of Antarctica. That's how the ALH, it was found in 84. That's where the 84 comes from.
Oh.
And then 001, it was the first meteorite found that year. And it was this meteorite that sparked this great debate about if there were life on Mars, because the people who first studied it thought that it had fossils in it.
And?
So it's like a little bit still of a debate.
Is it serious?
Yeah. That was one of my projects, was like trying to like figure out. People study this rock since 96 was when that paper came out. Like, mm-hmm. some people still think that there's fossils in it, like a bacteria fossils. And so like I was trying to apply like new techniques to see if there could be like a more definitive test. And so like even my stuff, it was like a little inconclusive.
Oh my God. What kind of test do you do to figure out if there's bacteria in there?
So I was like trying to figure out, I was using what's called like paleomagnetism, where we're studying the magnetic properties of the rock. Mm-hmm. And so I was trying to figure out if proposed like bacteria, which are, they thought were magnetotactic bacteria, so that they travel like along magnetic field lines and have little magnetites in them. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to figure out which one it was. And basically, it was inconclusive.
Oh.
Yeah, I know. And we thought we were being so clever.
At what point do you have to call it and say it's inconclusive?
So, like, it's really easy to say no, mm-hmm. but it's not so easy to say yes.
So, what happened with the recent announcement? Like, everyone, watch out. We have an announcement to make about Mars. And everyone's like, I'm setting my alarm clock. I'm staying up late.
Yeah.
What happened with that announcement?
So, there were what people call like the building blocks of life that were found with the Curiosity rover. These like just like molecules that are actually really hard to preserve. They were found by the rover, pretty like fresh looking. And so they're, I don't know, just like the building blocks of life that were found, and we didn't think that we would find them because they can get destroyed really easily. So that mm-hmm. means that they were like resurfaced like pretty recently, which is really exciting. And that they were there at all was exciting, that mm-hmm. they could have formed.
And so this was a heads up. We have the ingredients to make life. We didn't find it yet, but we found the ingredients.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah. It's especially a big deal that we found it at all, because like it's so easy for these things to be destroyed on the surface of Mars. Mars like surface is like subject to a lot of radiation, and then there's like lots of things on the surface that like oxidizing species, or they're just kind of like not good for these molecules. And mm-hmm. so we just like, I don't think we expected that they would even still be there, and they were there.
How did you react when you found out the news? And did you get a heads up like way before?
Well, that was like a Curiosity rover like press release, and so like I did know about that before.
Yeah. How did you feel when you found out with your team?
It's exciting. Like a lot of times when stuff like that, when there's like an exciting like potential for astrobiology kind of thing coming out, what people do is like try to figure out how could it be wrong. Like to, you know, kind of, okay, this is what it looks like, but could we explain it some other way? Like, could we have screwed up or something? And so like a lot of times there's discussion about that. Like, could it be actually a blip in the instrument, or could it be something else? And so like, that's like a hard discussion to go through, but it's like kind of a little interesting too. And so, mm-hmm. But then when all those things get like crossed off the list, and like what's left is that it's actual detection, then it's exciting.
Ooh, I bet. Cause it's just like kind of incremental discoveries too, until you have another breakthrough, right?
Yeah. Like the methane, like there are people propose like so many different ways. So like methane is a thing that like, it doesn't survive a long time in the atmosphere. And so mm-hmm. if it's there at all, like it had to have come from like relatively recent times. And it's often a product of life, you know, mm-hmm. like they say like cow farts and stuff like that. Like, so, or like bacteria. And so, yeah, there, people were like, oh man, how can we explain this methane any other way other than like life? I don't think anyone's saying that it's like life making this methane, but there was like lots of debate, like could the methane have come from something that we did, like from the tire breaking or the wheel breaking or something like that. Yeah,
but it might just be an underground cavern of farting cows.
Maybe.
You never know.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, anything's possible.
Just when a cow emerges from a space cave being like, oh, hey, I didn't see that.
The next rover, the 2020 rover, has like a little microphone on it.
Does it really?
Yeah, so it can listen to the surface of Mars and then maybe it'll hear like
Now, is it called the 2020 rover because they're gonna launch it in 2020?
Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And it's also like clear vision.
Yeah. That's why it's like catchy, but it's gonna be named. It's like a school children contest. Like they're gonna pick the name. Like I think all the rovers have been named like that.
Oh, that's such a cool distinction.
Yeah,
it's like, hey kids, you're gonna inherit this planet once we turn it to garbage, so you get to name the rovers for your next planet.
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah.
I have 1 million questions for you.
Okay.
Is it okay if I ask you 1 million?
Yeah.
Okay. So many questions. I love that you know you are a patron. You've looked at some of these.
Yeah.
You've looked at all of them?
The ones that were posted as of a few hours ago.
This is what I want in someone who studies other planets, is this level of like detail and preparation. Like this gives me faith in the space program.
Okay, that is it for part one. You now have a primer on Areology, Mars, the absolute gem of an Earthling, Jennifer Booz. So next week, we come back with all kinds of very weird and awesome questions. We talk about habitability, more sci-fi stuff. It's all the weird stuff next week. So to learn more about Jennifer and her work, visit jnnfr.bz. It's her name, no vowels. We are at Ologies on Twitter and Instagram, and I'll post some photos of me and Jennifer at Caltech recording this. I'm also at Allie Ward with 1L on Twitter and Instagram. And thank you so much to Stephen Ray Morris for editing this literally the day that it goes up. I've been shooting on a new show for the past few weeks and have not had a lot of time for sleeping or eating or anything. And so Stephen, you're a trooper for helping me get this up on time. Thank you to the patrons at patreon.com/ologies for the amazing Mars questions you asked next week. They are hilarious questions. You are going to want to hear them. Trust me. Also, feel free to join if you like. Little as 25 cents an episode. Thank you, Bonnie Dutch and Shannon Feltis, for running ologiesmerch.com for me. Feel free to join the Facebook Ologies podcast group. Thank you, Hannah Lippo and Aaron Talbert, for running that. You're amazing. Theme song was written and performed by Nick Thorburn of the band Islands. And if you stick around past the credits, you know I tell a secret. And this week I freaked out because I've known Aaron Talbert since I was 4, and I've been so crazy with early call times that I forgot her birthday on the 25th. And I almost started crying. I texted her apologizing. I'm so sorry. I was mortified. And she was like, bitch, my birthday is in January. And I was like, yeah. And she's like, it's June. So happy early birthday next year, Aaron. And thank you for reminding me that it's not currently January and that I should probably get some sleep. Okay, come back next week for really weird Mars questions. It'll make you 1,000% more informed for your next cocktail party, or capable of making the decision of which planet to live on if shit goes down here. Okay, bye-bye.
Pachydermatology, homeology, cryptozoology, lithology, nanotechnology, meteorology,